things to say about last time. So I guess, so Alyosha asked me to give some motivations, and I guess last time I haven't made it very clear what is motivation for talking about quantum groups or why quantum groups are hop algebra. So let me look at hop algebra. So I mean, just make it's also in the notes, but I think so. Something when you have not just an algebra, you also have a core algebra structure that's compatible. It will give you also module structure on tensor product of modules, and that's kind of something you want because you put, for example, quantum system together, one next to each other. You want to have a representation of the collected system, right, in physics. So in terms of math, it may turn into a tensor category. The category modules will be a tensor category. And also the antipod S. So we'll talk about antipod S. And it will give you, if you want, dual particles. So if you have positive charge or negative charge, that kind of stuff. I mean, antipod will make it the right thing because you will have pair creation and annihilation. So you will see later. And so let's talk about, and well, we'll talk about that, but that's the motivation for having these algebraic definitions. The second thing was that last time I did not tell you what an algebra morphism and co-algebra morphism is, but it's in the notes and they're kind of important. And when I talk about compatibility, I assume that you know what it is, as well as the structure on the algebra structure on K and H tensor H. But you know, they're all in there, so just point out to you that some things were not quite complete. So let me start this time. So by also talking a little bit about the example we started last time. So remember last time we had this example. We have a finite group G. You can kind of create this, which is called a group algebra, and also something that's called like the set of functions on G form. You know, you have this dual space of K of G, the functions on G, and G is finite. Today, so I'm going to talk about something kind of maybe can be said to be inspired by this construction. So I was saying that we'll talk about the algebra, and universal Maveling algebras and regular functions and algebraic groups. So now G is no longer a finite group. It's an algebraic group. So it's like, you know, a Lie group of some sort, algebraic group. A little more specific, I'll define, but it's kind of bigger. So like it's not finite. So if you construct this space, it's no longer a finite dimensional vector space. We call the bases here are just a group elements. And if you have like infinite dimensional, you want it to be somewhat manageable. So you at least want something like, because infinite dimensional, even you want it to be graded, you know, you have graded piece, each of these pieces is a direct sum of some finite dimensional pieces. So for example, to do that, you can look at it's the universal enveloping algebra, the algebra that's what gives you the gradedness.
Does it have to be separable?
Which part? This part?
Yes.
I don't know. Usually people want it to be semi-simple, but I don't want to discuss the condition today. I'm not sure. So, I mean, in general, you can look at the Lie groups and construct the universal enveloping the construction.
So I mean, does it need to have a basis that is countable?
That kind of stuff. Okay. It will be separable.
Sorry, so G itself is usually finite, right?
Yeah.
It's a question of what the
that she was saying that it's infinite.
It's an infinite group.
Yes.
But it's a finite dimensional group. So it's like it could be like, you know, SUN or something.
Okay, no, but K of G will be...
So K of G will be very big. If G is G is huge,
right,
then it will be infinite dimensional and not necessarily countable. This is notes from last time. So in general, it won't be countable, but if you look at the Lie algebra...
The vector space is not countable.
Here.
Yes, I'm just asking if it has a countable basis.
Right, because, like, you know, if G is infinite, then that's uncountable, right? But I don't know, you know, maybe...
Well, yeah, you can have infinite intervals.
Yeah, you don't know if G is uncountable. If G is uncountable, it's a big group. Like, you know, to start with, usually a lot of big groups are
So it doesn't...
Yeah, so we just solve our problem. We don't like to deal with very, very infinite stuff, right? We want to do something... We could deal with infinite stuff, but kind of, you know, not hugely big. So maybe instead you will look at that. So this is associated with algebra. And then you look at inverse enveloping algebra from the construction, you will see there's a natural gradient. And here, on this side, you look at the regular functions instead of all functions. So so I mean, I'm not sure about this is the right statement, but kind of maybe you know, by looking at the algebra, you kind of looking at something kind of local, like maybe regular function is something also is kind of local, but you know, I'm not sure. So including on that. But I mean they're just helping like to limit the set of things you're looking at, but make it a little bit smaller. So this is all functions on G, right? Basically. And this is regular functions on G. So regular, you know, means like has like polynomials, so you can cut off a certain degree and say this finite piece and you know look at the next degree and also finite piece. So it's also a sum of you know finite dimensional stuff. And the result in the end, like you know, these things are actually dual to each other. So doing this restriction, like you're kind of restricting these things and restricting to these things, they're restricting kind of the same way because they still have a duality between them. So that's kind of you know part of the well, part of the motivation, and part of, and also, so that's why we're looking at it. Okay, so let me just give you a very quick definition of the algebra, so I'm sure you know. Symmetry and also the Jacobian identity. So this is long to write. Okay, so that's just what it is. Now that's I mean this part is probably familiar with, but I want to talk about of course, it's also the tangent space of identity and the associated, the corresponding VL groups. But okay, and I want to talk about universal enveloping algebra. So maybe some of you may be less familiar with that. So last time I was saying something like this is kind of smallest associated algebra. Containing the algebra. So, but I'll make it a little more precise. So, I mean, at first, I write a construction, and I'll say, you know, something like mathematicians how they would say a universal property about the universal enveloping algebra. So, I mean, we want to work with algebra rather than the algebra. It's kind of, well, sometimes, right? Because algebra, I mean, you can turn the algebra, you have this product that's easy to work with, and you can still have the Lie bracket, so you might as well have an additional structure. And also, another motivation is if you want to study representation of the algebra, the universal enveloping algebra designed so that the modulus over this as an algebra, I mean, over this algebra, is the same as the module over the Lie. Over the algebra, so modulus of representations of synonyms. Okay, so given G, can construct U of G, and this is defined as so this is a tensor. tensor, whatever the one is called, how to construct it. So basically, this piece is to take kind of all the, you know, one copy of G, you know, and two copies of Q, and so on. So you allow any, so the product in here, this is an algebra structure, so I guess, but I forgot what the name is. But you allow a multiplication of elements in G by just simply tensor product, right? So you just write them next to each other, or you can put a tensor between them, up to you.
This is the tensor product there?
Yeah, and they come any.
It's not the direct sum. It's the
direct sum. So you're allowed to take something, you know, your element.
Oh, the direct sum of principle.
Yeah, something. Yeah. You can take two pieces terms. One. So, okay. And if you see this kind of, there's natural grading. You know, so you can go up grading. This is the first, is it like 1 degree component, two, and so on, right?
I mean, that sum is an infinite sum.
Yes, infinite sum. So maybe I'm missing a 0 degree possibility. But you
it's
know,
like
the
well, the
identity
is in
key,
right?
So yeah, the identity is in key, so maybe it's okay.
That's probably the zero.
Yeah.
So it's like the fox space?
Well,
the direct sum.
I mean, I can see the analogy. I'm not sure it actually is a fox space.
Just the formula looks like.
Yeah.
The direct sum of all the space.
It's the same, it's the same flavor, but these are
the
particles,
identity,
right?
Is not necessarily in G. Is it? I mean, it's
zero.
Well, zero is there, but you might. Okay, you might need the K. You might need
the
K. Yeah,
the zero.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Yeah. So you do need a 0 degree component, 1 degree, 2 degrees. So yeah. And the LG. So LG is this ideal. So ideal J, an algebra ideal. So the thing generated by S tensor Y. So I'm now talking about things in here. So my legitimate element are like things like these. This is an element in here. And any sum or product, sum of them is also an element. So I'll do another one, and then I subtract off also this. And this, you know, because G is a D-algebra, this one thing is simply in G, right? So some set therefore is a 1 degree piece in the tensor of the tensor. Okay. So this the bracket here means that you're generated by it, which means you allow. So I'm setting what by modeling I was setting such things as zero here. So you're saying that this element is equal to that inside here and the quotient. Okay, so and if you add anything, you can replace the, you know, it, well, like, so you allow multiplication and addition, like, because it's an algebra ideal, not vector space ideals.
Okay. I'll just guess to say that universal developing algebra is constructed by taking products of everything in G in such a way that the Lie bracket is equal to
commutator. Yes, that's right. Just with the enforced condition. Okay, so maybe if you're a little confused about this, I want to say maybe the basis, right? It has a basis. Right? If you pick, let's say if you have a basis for G, and if you do, okay, this is we have. So let's label them V1 to Vn. Then you can a basis for T of G is basis. It will be something like take the like basically words in these set, you know, words like x1, you know, take arbitrary number of these things, but you cannot commute them, right? So that gives your basis.
Sorry, wait, what did you say? You cannot commute them?
So what I mean is x1 tensor x2 is not the same as x2 tensor x1.
For GFG.
Yeah. But you know, it gets a little more complicated. If you
yeah.
I mean, I just want to tell you a basis kind of thing. So now let's look at the picture. So I'm going to state a universality statement. So let's look at these properties, or universal property of U of G. So let's look at, so if I start with the Lie algebra, so like you have a map from the, you know, this U of G, U gives you a map from the Lie algebras to associative algebras. The algebras I've been talking about last time is always the systems. And just today I just want to distinguish them. So you have, let me just first, right, there's this map from G to U of G. So like as I said, you get your first. This is an associative algebra. U of G is an associative algebra. Similarly, if you're given an associative algebra, you can also go the other way by taking V of A. Kind of, if you, V of A is constructed by the same vector space as A. This is the same vector space, but the Lie bracket is given by the commutation of A. Okay. So this construction, so I'll just write it, equals A as vector spaces, and also X, Y, you know, two elements, and anything on here is defined as X, Y minus Y, S. Because this is an associative algebra, everything is defined here. So you get some element in the algebra which you define to be this. So and now I'm going to state the property, universal property. It will be, so it's saying that the set of Lie algebras, the set of Lie algebra morphisms. Well, maybe I didn't state this so well, but like, I mean, let's bear with me for a second, I didn't define it. So from G, so what are your Lie algebras? So you know, you have these things are your Lie algebras, you do the construction, okay. So for any associative algebra A, you turn it into Lie algebra and you look at the set of all map Lie algebra maps from G to L of A. That's going to be in bijection, this is bijection, with the set of algebra morphisms from the universal enveloping algebra, which is associative algebra, from this to the origin algebra A.
So if you take G, and then you take U of G, and you take L of U of G, you don't generally get back G, right?
So the question is, so you might get something bigger. You said U of L of G.
L of U
of G is to get something bigger.
Right.
So but you will conclude, so there's an injection.
But if you take A, and you take L of A, and then U of L of A, that is always equal to A? Or not?
Yeah,
I mean, this makes sense, right?
Well, maybe it's not. I mean, because you're taking the formal products. The fact that you have the existing products.
It depends on...
Yeah, no, I think it's bigger again.
Maybe it depends a little bit on the algebra structure of A, you think, because you know,
well,
if you have some commutivity, I mean, but then
you
would
take,
just
modify U of L of A, it doesn't know that you have the original multiplication structure in A,
That's right, but
you when you model this out, you get the original structures in here.
It's encoded in the Lie bracket, so it's fine. You get back the same thing. Okay.
So like it's included in the bracket, so you want to model out these things, you know, the L of G, just G is L of A, then I think you model out, like, at least, you know, quite a bit of things are recognized. I'm not sure where, but I actually probably knows. I mean, at least you know that encodes some algebra structure, right? You model out by the right thing.
Yeah, of course.
But, I mean, maybe other structure, I don't know what other structure can be included.
But you don't have a thing that says that x tends to y is equal to x times y, right? That doesn't follow.
Basically, here you're assuming x tensor y is x equals y. We define the lead.
Of course. When you go to elevate, that's fine. But when you go back to U, then you have this new multiplication that you're adding, and there's nothing that constrains it to be equal to the old multiplication.
So I was saying because of this. So a priori, you can take any kind of write-out on your products. You don't know which products are same as which other ones. What's the relation between all the possible ways of writing the words in these spaces? But now, when you model by this, I think it does the right identification, like what we're saying. That must be the reason it's doing the right identification. So sometimes this way of writing the product, and that way of writing the product, I put one another, it's equal to sum of two different ways or something. But this is included in here. So this product is like, this is like the free group, if you talk local groups, this free group, you model by all the relations.
You
can always construct, probably construct an algebra by taking the free algebra generated by the words and model by the relations.
Sure.
That makes sense.
But anyway, it's not clear to me that that's all the relations that define the algebra.
Right.
Maybe
I haven't worked it out so carefully. Right. But conceivably, yes. Okay. So I was going to say here that you assign this thing, one thing maybe I did not tell you, of course, as you said, kind of as you mentioned, it comes with an inclusion of this Lie algebra into this L of U of G. So in general, it kind of has a piece of G, but maybe when you could define this. In this abstract way of defining, you need to deal with this. Like, how is G embedded? How is G included in there? But anyways, from your understanding of the algebra, it's my argument. Okay. So let's talk about.
So L of U G is not a G again. It's bigger,
U,
right?
U of G is in general. It includes products as well as Lie brackets.
Yes.
So let's talk about algebras. So I'm saying that this is a Hopf algebra, right? So last time we saw that K of G is a Hopf algebra, now I want to show that U of G is also a Hopf algebra. So the algebra structure is clear, just from the way, just taking the tensor product, right? The tensor product and so on. And also, the identity gets sent to the identity in there, I stick in the zero degree piece. It's okay. Now for algebra. Some of it also contains more details, but now I just want to. So I guess there's a dependence a little bit. If you're familiar with the representation of the algebra, say, so then you will, you have this condition. Just for comparison, okay, if you have U and V, the algebra representations, algebra, you have an action on U and an action on V, then, what is the action on U tensor V? Okay. Then G on U tensor V, you remember maybe that it's given by, take an element, say X, right, X inside G. So X acting on U tensor V, like for U and U and V and V. Maybe you get something like U tensor X acted on V plus X tensor U, X acted on U tensor V. Okay, so for people who are familiar with representing the algebras also on the tensor product of spaces, then you see that if you know that, then you know, okay, the common creation ought to be something. And what is it? It's this, So one tensor x. So I then add here, x add there, and then x at the first component and one x on the second component. Why is that? So I mean, as I commented earlier, you know, the rather recent to study Hopf algebras, when you have this co-algebra structure, which is compatible with the algebra structure, you get a connection on the tensor product of spaces, right, by given letters. So it's like a general statement, which I guess I haven't made precise, but I want to show you a little. So, yeah, on tensor product, you just let delta u act on the tensor product. Yes, so, okay. So that's the co-algebra structure. And you have some more complicated general formula. Maybe a little here to show it. So if you have, so what does it have to be? Maybe take a second to think about, you know, if you have this on the generators, so this is for x inside G, okay? So now x1 through xn are inside G. What should be the formula?
Sorry, and that's delta of the product of x1 for xn?
Yes. Yes.
So the, sorry, the g is, you mean, so the product in u of g, right, yes, sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
So you could write tensor products, but often people just not
sure.
So can you guess why, you know, I mean, just think about what it is, I'll tell you in a second.
Well, it's supposed to be linear, right?
Well, it's the completely simple.
Wait, it's still on the basis, so I cannot define use linearity yet. I'm not defining on sum, I'm defining on the product.
Is it the sum of all the
But you know that something almost like that. So, but this is an algebra morphism, so use that fact. So, you, when you, so I'm using this fact. Xi delta xj equals delta xi xj. So now the question, I'm asking you what is this on the right hand side, right, more or less. And then you're going to say, well, things like this multiplied together. And how does it go? So it, so imagine this, like, you know, you're putting x somewhere. Like given this, you're saying I have two bins, and you know, sometimes like half a time I put it here, half a time put it there, something like that. Or just one time, you know, do it twice. And then you have some of other ways of putting this 1 and 2 n into things. So 1 and n can be, 1 through n can be either on the left side of the tensor product or on the right side. Right, because you're getting something in. So this whole element will be in, so just help you straighten things out. So there are more than one tensor product. So what there's this little tensor product, which I don't write anymore in each of these. But there's a big tensor product, which you have to write. So this is a co-modification, you split into two copies. So now, so what I have is, so some x, either xi can be on the left-hand side or the right-hand side, but not on both sides, one condition. And also the order is always in that order, because you put them in the right order. So, but you never have three before two or something like that. So the sum will be this. So you need the first that piece, and they also have, and in the end you also have the other piece, right? You first plot everything on the left bin and then nothing on the right one. And then you also have so summation over so this is a little just nasty to write, but the meaning is not, it's not so bad. Another notation. Tensor sigma p plus 1 times x to n sigma n. So and this is, it's not sum over all the permutation, but it's just the pq shuttles in the column. But I much so that's n. So you are kind of permuting everything, but you just want the order within each of them to be this in the same order as here, so always the smaller one comes first. Also on the right, that's basically the definition of PAQ shuffles. So you preserve order in each of these and then distribute. So I'm here. Sorry. So that's the definitional test of for algebra, but sufficient to define on these. So from this you get this. So the antipode on U of G is this so you can just say if given on X is just minus X.
And so there's the identity between the P and the P plus one?
P and identity where? This one?
In the sum.
I'm just asking.
P and P plus three.
I'm a bit lost.
This is tensor product.
Yeah.
You don't need identity if you stick in here is the same as nothing. Because the identity is inside the scalar, the K, like inside K. Right? So if you multiply the scalar one, you don't change.
So
you can stick it in, that's not necessary. So but you have to have it here. So you have to have it here because if you don't put it here, it could be zero. I mean, it doesn't mean you need to have something on the right slot. So because you have nothing else on the right slot, so you have to have the identity there, the zero.
The sum goes from?
1 to n minus 1. So you just say, so because here is the sum, basically, this is a p equals 0 piece, if you like to see.
Mm-hmm.
Because, so there are p things on the left-hand side and n minus p things on the right-hand side. So p equals 0, that means like there's nothing on the right.
Okay.
And so on. That's the other piece. This is the p equals n piece. Okay.
Yeah.
So s of x equals minus x, this definition. You can prove this, but you use the fact. So, I mean, or you can take it as definition as well. So here they use the fact that you know you could prove when we define antipole, you can prove that this is an algebra antimorphism, which means that you almost have this kind of thing, but except you switch these product, whether this one or that one. So switch one of them. So basically S is an algebra antimorphism. Which you can prove, but we didn't prove. So you can just take this as a definition. You might as well take this as a definition. So I wish I could answer that. So there's motivation for this. So if you look at why do we define S as minus X? So when we look at the group case, like for KG, we'll see that, you know, for a group, kind of K of, you know, of an element G, and then I'm getting confusing. So G is inside G. This thing is basically you get the G inverse. The antipode maps to the inverse. So, like we call in K of G, okay? And so for Lie groups, it's a valid definition most of the time. So I mean, maybe certain things don't work out, but you can define things. I mean, this would be a good definition of antipole in group structure. So in general. And here, when you go to the tension space, you're looking at the Lie algebra. So when you take the inverse, basically you get a minus sign, right? So because you're looking at the exponent. So if you write this as e to the some other little group L, no, Lie algebra elements, and then when you the inverse, you just put a minus sign in front of the Lie algebra element. So kind of that's why you know you can justify this by thinking in terms of groups. The next thing I want to do is. Talking about algebraic groups. So let me define an algebraic group first. So I guess it's the same kind of group and an algebraic variety, such that the group action is in the morphism of algebraic varieties. group operation, like inverse and multiplication, can be written as nice functions. Okay, so, but let me give you one, so let me try to write this. So what does it mean? So as a set, and yeah, I haven't written down a general definition before, but as a set, you can think of, what I'd rather give you. Okay, so as group structure, that and the group structure are a mass of the variety of varieties. But I want to say, okay, what do I want to say? So as a set, it's kind of a set of maybe if you is affine a variety, then you can think it as some x1 through xn. Such that some polynomial, or maybe it's possibly, possible set of polynomials, but for now, some polynomial in this Spanish on the set, that's kind of a great variety. But though, you can put in a few more, PG or something. So, maybe you already have intuition. The examples, for example, of the algebra itself. Two, and you can say that the determinant has to be big SL two.
Yeah, so it's the group this that's the algebraic variety.
Yes. So you have a determinant equals one condition, and in that you can have four dimensionals, affine space, and then you restrict to the zero set of determinant minus one, and you get a manifold. So basically, that kind of things you can think of as algebraic.
So, but then GLN is not. It is, right? Because
it's not equal. You said.
Yes, it's not equal to zero. But that is an algebraic variety, isn't it? Is the complement of an algebraic variety isn't that still an algebraic variety?
It was open, right?
Oh, that's true.
Usually, it's closed and it's not.
Right.
I'm not too surprised either. Okay, so. Algebraic. So now let's define regular functions. So maybe we call this G and they call this O. G. So regular functions on G. And this can basically be defined as the set of functions. Let's say go.
Sorry. Just to back up a second.
Mm-hmm.
For algebraic group, this is necessarily over the complex numbers, the polynomials, or is it? For instance, can you do it just with a finite, like?
You can change a field.
So SL, Z, so P, for instance, that's also an algebraic group.
I think in general you can vary the K, but for some theorems to work out, you want it to be algebraic close for various things constant. But to define them, you're probably fine.
But it doesn't have to be like reals or complex or anything like that. It could be a finite field or the algebraic closure of a finite field or something like that, a non-zero characteristic. Maybe that's off in the
right.
Okay, it doesn't mean
so usually people can think of them as C or R, maybe C or something. It's just uh-huh. Nice, but I'm not sure how much of it's necessary. Maybe for definitions okay, but
okay.
So basically the functions on these things, and maybe in this form I don't need to write out this regular function. Okay, I said so it's basically polynomials. These variables, the n xn 1 through xn, such that still is constrained by the same thing. So you still need to be on the variety. So for polynomials, let's say to come out to K, since you have a field K. So now I want to define the algebra structure of it. Because But I want to give motivation similar to what we have before.
Sorry, I'm extremely confused by that definition.
So
these are polynomials that vanish on the group.
Yes. So it just means that you still define it on the group, but it.
Even though it's only interesting off the group.
You want to know on the group, so.
You have two different polynomials, one which gives you the constraint of what the group is, and the other one are the regular functions, which are different polynomials.
Oh, I see. Okay, sorry. I see. So it's polynomials that are only defined on the group. On the Friday.
So let me write. So I have. It's only defined in the group, let's say. But I'm just my way of writing it. I haven't thought about how to write out this nest, but I will put them in the notes. But here, sometimes they can take. I mean, you have to specify. You know, here maybe things. It might not take value in the.
Is it possible you can give us just like a really easy example?
Yes, I will.
Okay.
Maybe I should give it here since now. Yeah. I mean, the whole point is because, you know, I've only worked with examples. I haven't tried to write down the general definitions like this and stuff. So if you have, now let G be your SL, you know, SL2. What is it like? SL2. So let G. So be SL2. So this means that, you know, like, A, B, C, D, like these entries, possible entries. So the mathematicians sometimes look at these things different, like not quite in this way. But let's just say A, B, C, D such that A, D minus B, C equals minus 1 equals 0. I haven't specified what is the same. But they can have a different field. I mean, they can be, this one can be an algebra, and this one can be this k value. So it's kind of, I didn't discuss too much about that. But O of G would be, for the set of polynomials in these things, in A, B, C, D, but maybe I'm just writing out so far, but you just need to satisfy the same constraint, except it means somewhat different thing because it's potentially different values in different places. Okay, but I mean, more, I have to write it out. So, such that A, B minus B, C, never mind. So, okay, I think I also want to stick here. So, what I said was modding out A minus B, C.
Well, because I didn't understand the constraint that the polynomials on the polynomial constraint.
I'm asking why it doesn't make sense. I'm asking why does it make sense.
Why does it make sense? Yeah. Well, it makes sense to mod out by that because those are kind of, those are the things that are the same, right?
No,
The point is SL2 is not a four-dimensional thing. It's like a three-dimensional thing. Right, so you only want to define it on kind of those three dimensions. So you have to mod out, but yeah, it makes sense to me anyway.
Okay. So let me change this. Maybe like probably, but I think so. It also, I'm sure it makes more sense.
The point is, if there's two polynomials that differ by that, then they're the same because they have the same off-group.
Yes. So. Right, so because we have two things, one's in the domain, one is in the conditions in the range. So we're saying that, you know, because in the domain they're the same, so they need to be So yes.
Ask a question before you give the hop algebra structure of
okay.
the general algebra group. If you go back to the previous one, you didn't give us what the identity and co-identity were.
Yes,
and
but they...
I've been trying to figure it out in my head and figure out how it does it with the antipode, and then I don't see how.
Okay, but, so identity goes from new trick. So maybe, I mean, what it makes sense, does it to take this just the one here? Okay. Right. I mean, it's very canonical. So, then the other thing. Yes. So if you take any x and again x in this also, right? Then I think it's going to be zero, and epsilon one is one. So epsilon one has to be one because an alpha one has to keep the identity in here to the identity in there,
mm-hmm.
but everything is now zero. So it shouldn't work. Yeah, as usual, you know, maybe people think these structures are a bit more interesting, so I'll just focus on that. Mm-hmm.
So then, could you show us how that relates to the antipode? Because we're supposed to have epsilon eta is equal to the
eta. Epsilon eta.
Well.
Oh, that's you need the convolution. You mean to use the convolution?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or is that too complicated? It's too complicated.
It's not, not now, maybe.
Okay.
But I think this was a very good motivation for defining. So everything should work if
mm-hmm.
you check carefully. It comes from the group definition. So if it works on groups, then it should work on
groups.
Okay. So, how about the structure on origin? Okay, so again, algebra structure given already. Did I call it an algebra? Okay. But basically, the regular function form of algebra, you multiply. Two functions together, like you were saying, you know, on two points, you find on that point, you just value the function at that point, times value the other function at that point, give you a new function. You find all the whole area, like point-wise multiplication. This is just the thing. But it should be, it's clear, like before. Then the other, like, also like for, okay, to multiplication and this one. Okay. For algebra, I've been working with this for a while and I kind of did not realize that it has nice properties sometimes. Okay, but I'll tell you how to define it. So, how to see this. But, so remember last time we have the duality between algebra and co-algebras. So, if you take the co-product of an element in the you can kind of think of an element in the dual space, but a subset of the element in the dual space, in the function. Then you get, and then this is something in the middle. I might put the lambda bar here, but you can kind of sometimes ignore it. I mean, it's not crucial. So this is something in OG, maybe like this. I'm not sure if this is the right notation, because the structure, just two copies of OG, let's say. And then you try to add on this just by piecewise. And by being the definition, it comes from the multiplication structure on the group. Okay, so we'll see the note that it comes from this multiplication here. Okay, so what it means is you have two elements in G. G is just an algebraic group, and the multiplication stays on the same manifold. And you get a new element, and you just let F add on that. So what does it comes out in formula? So in the case of SL2, they're called SL2. SL2, that's right. So now I call it OSL2, so the regular function on SL2. What it will be is A, B, C, D. Well, it's like you have to be careful about the notation, but you can see, I'm going to justify this definition. So here, you're taking, so this notation actually means, I'll write up part-wise. If I don't want to confuse you, you can see A tends to A, plus B tensor C, just like kind of like how you multiply matrices, except for a tensor product in between. And on the left hand side, it means that the delta of A gives you that, and delta of B gives you that, you know, so on.
Sorry. So, but A, B, C, D is an element of SL2, not an element of O of SL2.
So it maps a generator, so it tells you. I think it all comes from me not being very careful with writing the definitions there.
Are you seeing A, B, C, D as being like A being the function look at element A?
You can think of it as where X gets mapped to, S1 gets mapped to. So
yeah.
In that one you have, so maybe I should have these variables. So maybe here's the x1, x2, x3, x4, where x1 times x4, so you start with something, and then x gets mapped to a, and b gets mapped to x,
you mean a of an SL2 element gives you x1, is what you mean, right?
Yeah,
the function a of an SL2 element gives you x1. Is that what you mean?
I don't mean that. I just mean that it maps x1 to a, I think. So it maps x2 to b. And then when you say it's polynomial in those things, so you can take, you know.
So a, b, c, d are basis for a set of polynomials.
If an algebra, apparently.
Maybe you can ignore ABCD as a map from
The point is ABCD are the
function.
four polynomials, the characteristic, the coordinate polynomials basically. And so you're saying that defining it on those four because they generate the algebra. Will give you the whole thing.
I'm a little confused at this point. I'm sorry about this point. So,
I think that makes sense. So A, B, C, D are four polynomials. The polynomial that gives you the 1-1 component of the matrix, the 1-2, 2-1, and 2-2 components, right?
Okay.
So those are certainly polynomials in O of P. And I think it's strongly saying that they should generate as an algebra O of P, right? Because any polynomial is going to be a product of some subsets of those things with some power, right? Or plus constant terms. And therefore defining the action of delta on those things, because it's an algebra morphism, should define it on all of OSL2.
Oh, yeah, of course you define on those things, you're fine.
And so what you're writing now is to define it on those four things.
Well, I'm not sure if A, B, C, D are already whatever you call polynomials or whatever, because I'm taking O of G as polynomials. They are really.
Yeah, sorry, I mean, there's some ambiguity about the notation, but you can define polynomial that takes the 1-1 coordinate,
mm-hmm.
right, and returns that. That's certainly a valid polynomial.
Okay, yeah. What about you just be a function? Why do you call it a polynomial? Why don't you take...
Well, yeah, it's a function, but it is a polynomial, which means that it's in O of G, which is important. But...
Well, A being itself in O of G.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Elaborate more next time, because I know it's pretty confusing right now. And I haven't worked too much. But just... We finish up with kind of justifying this definition. So, but if you don't know what it means, then just...
But is the true in general for an algebraic group that G is in OG?
G is in OG. I didn't mean that. We can take those definitions by yourself because I didn't write them down before.
Yeah.
So I'm not...
Yeah, so... A, B, C, D as a matrix is, I don't think that's one element of OSL2. I think it's four elements.
OSL2.
And it's just convenient to write.
Yes, that's what I mean. Yes, of course. Yeah, I mean, I confused myself too, which I was trying to write. I mean, A, so you have, there are four elements, but basically that's what this notation means.
Yes,
each element they equals to that.
Right.
I mean, okay, there are elements in the two. But maybe somewhere I'm using some maybe the notation loosely and confuse myself, so I need to get back to this. But my point was that in this definition, I mean, all your arguments indeed can agree with that kind of definition. So it's you come along something like that, but it's the same as maybe letting because the multiplication defined according to the matrix multiplication, which is probably your group multiplication. I mean arguing loosely for now, that these functions apply just like that, so it's basically defined in this form. So maybe I'm also working on this because I'm sorry. I'll get back to, I'll clarify a little more. And let me just write down the end type also. I want to show how the duality we got last time is useful. If you see on the sheet that, so I said there's, last time we're going to talk about the bi-algebra duality, but it induces something on the, on top algebra as well. You just need to say what the antipode is. I mean, it gets you a new antipode by some math, right? So the antipode here, when you do the dual, you get, when you do the dual, it has some antipode, and it's given by this. So this, the antipode, like defined on kind of the dual space, is f s of x. So this s is in the domain. It's in G. This is antipode of G, which maybe I didn't write. But basically, antipode of G is like S inverse. Like in general for groups, when you take antipode, you get the inverse. So basically, you're evaluating f at x inverse. So it justified the next definition in terms of OSL2. This general definition asked me. Okay, so in terms of OSL2, you have A, B, C, D. So again, the same notation means the same thing for each of them. But you write it together like this because it's inspired by operations in the domain, in the group, right? So you get just because the determinant is 1, so 1 over the determinant is 1. Okay, so you get dA minus B minus C. So, and you this notation, it's confusing in some way because you forget that A, each of the entries are things in OSL2. But it kind of gives you, show you kind of how this operation comes from the operation in the group.
Sorry, the point is that D minus B minus C minus A would be the inverse of the matrix.
Yes. Yes. So you just do that. But since I messed up the definition, I'll come back a little, patch it up a little bit. But you can see from this notation, it's very suggestive. I mean, it should be the exact correspondence. So, okay, maybe I should stop here for today. Sorry to get you in a bit of confusion. I guess I apologize. It wasn't my main subject to do the algebras and legals. It just comes out in the definition, so I didn't spend much time. Okay. So I'll send the notes to you by the end of the day. So if you can write me your office number, so just quickly. So I can maybe
make
or just name so.
Maybe it's easier to put them in mailboxes.
Yeah, maybe a mailbox is good, but just put your name down. So I'm thinking about we're taking a break next week. Because there's a holiday. Okay. And then we'll do
what holiday is it?
Family Day. It's a PI show.
It's a Canadian thing?
It's an Ontario thing.
Ontario thing.
Christmas Eve off.
You guys are better.
So then this then the following week out we'll have another talk. And the week after, I'm filling out because I have two concerts to give that week, one at PI. So, because I'll be pretty stressed. And then we'll continue after that. And probably be, well, at this pace, it will take a while, but I hope you get something along the way. I mean, get something out of it along the way. What do you think about, so everyone's, is 1 hour a good length, or should we do a little bit longer?
One hour is good.
Okay.
Just don't know how long.
Okay.
All right. Well,
now
there's a lot of stuff to study.
Is it a good pace though? I mean, music is too slow. It's always going a little slower down. Than I want. Because you want to get, in the end, get to something, you know, interesting, quantum groups. And it will take many lectures, so the thing, that's why I'm looking at longer lengths, not because I wanted to, you know, spend more time, you know, like that, but just, you know, maybe originally I was thinking about watching more intense and maybe 6 o'clock, which like will be the first. So I mean, my original plan was maybe the third one would be maybe category three, and the second one will be already quantum double construction, and then the last three maybe in topological and algebraic connections, like, but then, you know, I don't think, well, if you want to know the, you know, details and definitely working with it, which people seem to like. So
So of course it's more work for you, because, you know, to get the details so that when we arrive to the, you know, topological stuff, it would be like 20 lectures.
Yes, something
so,
like that.
So we, it's more work for you, but I actually like to have, you know, this kind of pace and have the details.
Well,
course, but then, of course, it's more work too.
Okay.
Sure.
Because some people might be eager to get to this stuff, right? And I'm only here once a week, so that's the thing.
Yeah, no, but yeah. In my case, then in the end, they wouldn't understand.
Okay,
no,
that's
I would
true.
Eager to not yeah. understand what's going on.
Okay. How about other people? Like, what do you think about the pace? I mean, it's not you're learning things on the way, maybe we might not, you know, we might not get to everything we want to get to, but
yeah.
Hopefully that will be. Okay, so as long as you're happy. So maybe very long. It's more than 10 lectures. I mean, for some basic lectures already doubled at least. Maybe you know a lot already, so I don't know.
No, I mean, I'm learning stuff on the way.
Okay,
I mean,
so,
I know these things. This is good for me. Right? Like that, I like it. Yeah.
All right, good. Okay, sounds good. Consensus. Okay, thanks everyone.